This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. When the pandemic lockdown sent us into our homes for work and school, it put us closer to our windows and backyards and closer to the creatures living in our midst. The new WUNC audio documentary Creep dives into the story of one animal that has made a big appearance on news and social media feeds, coyotes. Laura Pelliser is the co-host of Creep and WUNC's digital news producer. You may also recognize her name because she was a former State of Things producer. Laura, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Anita.
Elizabeth Friend is the other host of Creep. She is a reporter and independent producer and the co-founder of the Audio Under the Stars series. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, Anita.
So this special started with an interest that you had, Elizabeth, in invasive species. Tell me the story that piqued your curiosity about non-native wildlife in North Carolina.
Well, I grew up in North Carolina, spent time exploring the outdoors, and when my daughter was born, I started taking her out into nature as well. And we started seeing things in our yard, a neighborhood that I didn't recognize and didn't expect to see here. One that stands out in particular is we would go look for earthworms. And we came across this strange worm that we'd never seen before that looked like a cross between like a slug and a snake. But it had this scythe-shaped head that it would kind of sweep back and forth like a metal detector. And it just struck both of us as being creepy and weird and alien. And so I started doing armchair research, and I got really fascinated with these creatures, these hammerhead worms, but also like other creatures that seemed unexpected or out of place. And I started thinking about how these species and their impacts are a way to look at how North Carolina and the landscape of the broader South is changing, and also really delve into the unintended consequences of human behavior. Because I think even if we hate them once we're here, we have to recognize that a lot of times it's our own fault.
So, Laura, the two of you put your heads together and you got really nerdy about all of these creatures that are in our backyards and things we don't think about a lot. And then you decided to look at a particular subset of these species, non-native wildlife. Tell me about the choice to look at those in particular and how you landed on the name Creep.
well, in choosing that name, Creep, we realized it's a little bit provocative. And that it sort of suggests a bit of an insidiousness about some of these creatures. But, you know, Elizabeth approached me essentially about 6 or 9 months ago in the Durham office, in the before when we could meet in person. And she sort of came up to me and said, "Hey, do you want to do an audio special about invasive creatures?" And it's almost like she knew that I had secretly started carving out that beat for myself. As you know, I documented nutria on the State of Things, and those are sort of like a large swamp rat that have been moving in from the east to the west of the state, or sort of moving from east to west. They've been spotted as far west as Wake County, which is pretty surprising. And so we sort of both had this, as we say, sort of gruesome curiosity with some of these creatures that are moving into the state that we don't necessarily know about or notice until someone points them out. With the word creep, we were sort of trying to explore the mystery of how they got here and a little bit of the dark side of how they came in. Because often, as Elizabeth sort of suggests, it's often our fault, you know? They don't always just get here on their own, 2 feet or 4 feet or however many feet. We sometimes are complicit in how they got here.
Well, we're going to look into that and how coyotes got here in particular. And that brings me to this clip, Elizabeth, of your daughter, Zeta. She's 10 years old, and she joins you throughout this documentary to kind of share her observations of what's happening in and around your own home. So I want to listen to a clip of the two of you on a walk.
And so where do we find this poop?
Well, we found it in the middle of the road, which is where coyotes usually do that, because it's like, this is my spot and it's in a lot of the way for other coyotes to see. And so there looks like to be the remains of feathers.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good sign. That's coyote poop. Although it's not good for the birds.
That was 10-year-old Zeta, the daughter of Elizabeth Friend. Elizabeth and Laura Palliser are co-hosts of a new WUNC audio special, Creep. So, Elizabeth, tell me about discovering the coyotes in your own backyard and how that inspired the focus for this particular episode.
So we had some idea that there were coyotes near us, finding things like scat and hearing them howl. But one thing that really surprised me was just how cooperative the coyotes were throughout the production of this show. We thought going into it we'd be lucky if we could have a scene where we came across some evidence and explored what that meant for us. We never guessed that they would reward us with such vocal howling during the course of production.
Well, let's listen to a clip of that now. These are howls that you heard in your own backyard. So I think that's your daughter, and they're saying, oh, fudge. And it brings me to this question of these species that we think of as invasive. I mean, when I hear those howls, I feel a bit frightened and a bit scared. And our relationship with coyotes has evolved a lot over the years in North Carolina. So, Laura, tell me a bit about what you all uncovered about coyotes and how they got here. How did they get to be near to our own backyards?
Yeah, well, it's a really fascinating story because they are pretty new to our lives. And I personally really didn't know that much about them when we started this project. And I think one of the reasons why is I honestly didn't realize how pervasive they are in North Carolina. But essentially, how it all started is that prior to the 70s and 80s, there were no coyotes in the state. They had not been spotted yet. They were in the American West. They were essentially moving from the American West through the rest of the country. They were moving north and they were moving east. And in North Carolina, what happens is that all of a sudden in the early 1980s, they pop up out of nowhere in the eastern part of North Carolina, which raises a number of questions about if they're migrating, you know, across the rest of the country from the west to the east. Well, how did they pop up in the eastern part of the state when they had never been spotted in the west? And here's sort of the part of the story where I think we need to take some ownership. Our overconfidence as humans that we can control these animals kind of just reemerges over and over in the stories that we found out. So essentially, in the 1980s, hunters bring in coyotes from South Carolina, from other places. They bring them in to train their hunting dogs. They're essentially used as a replacement for foxes to train hunting dogs. And they're put in these enormous, enormous pens in eastern North Carolina. And the concept would be that they would be, you know, kept in these pens and that they wouldn't get out. Hurricane Hugo comes around and essentially causes widespread destruction in eastern North Carolina and physically knocks down these pens where these non-native coyotes have been stored, essentially. And then all of a sudden, you've got coyotes that are starting to pop up in the east before they ever popped up in the west. So, yeah, in many ways, we have quite a hand in how they got to North Carolina. At the same time, it is important to note that they did continue their migration from west to east. So they eventually did show up in the western part of the state. And those coyotes actually ended up looking a little different than the ones in the east.
Okay, so Elizabeth, we hear a bit about how they got to North Carolina. Does that make them invasive? What makes a species invasive?
So we use three criteria as we sort of sort through that. And the first one is, are they living outside their native range? Were they introduced by humans, either by accident or on purpose? And are they causing environmental or economic harm, or do they pose a threat to human health? And I went into this thinking that coyotes fit some of this criteria. And I was surprised to find that the impacts, those negative impacts, are actually less than I expected. I think we found fewer documented crazy coyote incidents than we anticipated, perhaps. And I think perhaps that's because they are so good at living alongside humans, but just under our radar. Like, we talked to Colleen Offenbuttle with the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission, and she said that there's this perception that every coyote is a threat to public health, but the data absolutely does not bear that out.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you mentioned how adaptable and resilient they are, and there have been some wild things that they have folded into their diets because of how adaptable they are. Let's listen to a quick clip from Perry Sumner, who's a North Carolina coyote expert that y'all talked to.
They eat animals, they eat plants. There have been problems with them with watermelon growers at times. The one thing that they always seem to prefer when they can get it over everything else is persimmons.
So that's Perry Sumner, a North Carolina coyote expert. So persimmons, that is quite surprising to me that they are that adaptable and would be interested in persimmons. And I wonder, I mean, Elizabeth, what do we know about how they were able to spread? There's a crazy statistic that you say in the piece where you can wipe out 75% of coyotes in an area year after year, but you still don't do that much to the overall population size. Tell me about that.
So they have just these amazing adaptations that have led to their survival and led them to thrive. They bounce back incredibly well. One way they do this is that their litter size is determined by the nearby population density of other coyotes. So if you were to, like, temporarily decrease their population by, like, trying to kill off a bunch of them, the females respond by starting to reproduce at a younger age and have larger litters. And then when the population stabilizes, the females go back to their regular reproductive behavior and have smaller litters. And then also, at, like Perry mentioned, they eat everything. You know, they are labeled as carnivores, but they're really opportunistic omnivores. And so while they might like squirrels, mice, rabbits, and things like that, they will also eat watermelons, insects, persimmons, sometimes rats, sometimes roadkill, garbage. They eat anything. And this other thing that's helped them really thrive and move is that if they don't like the conditions they're living under, they will move. They will disperse and colonize new areas. And to do so, they can travel hundreds of miles trying to find new territory. They're happy living near farmland, wetlands, mountain, forest, golf course, cemetery, anywhere that there's a spot for them. So if you try and remove one from your yard or your golf course, there's a really good chance that another one is going to see that as a vacant rental and move in. So they are regarded widely as one of the hardiest and most adaptable species on the continent, and they have used that to their advantage in every corner of the United States.
Laura, you found some really interesting research about coyotes in Raleigh and how they are kind of approaching closer and closer to people's houses, and there are these cameras that are documenting them. So tell me about what you all learned in terms of how they are adapting into these urban areas and what's going on in Raleigh in particular.
Yeah, I think one of the most standout sort of statistics for me during this project is we spoke with Roland Kays, who is the head of the biodiversity lab at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. And he told us about essentially research that's documented how present coyotes are in urban, suburban, and rural areas or exurban areas. And they are just as present in those three different categories, which I thought was really fascinating. So if you think that you are that you live in downtown Raleigh and there are no coyotes near you, essentially you are wrong. They are definitely there, but they are really, really good at hiding. So one of the things that researchers also brought up for us is that there have been these really unexpected coyote sightings during the pandemic. There's been coyotes that were wandering the streets of Chicago. There were coyotes sort of on the Golden Gate Bridge or just by the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. So they've been very emboldened. And usually they kind of hang out at night in urban areas. They're not seen. But because we haven't been outside, because for quite some time, you know, we weren't getting in our cars, there was less traffic, there is a sense that coyotes were moving in more visible ways during the daytime and could be spotted in urban areas like Raleigh. And I did find on Twitter, you know, I did quite a bit of Twitter scrolling to try and see people's experiences as it pertained to wildlife during the pandemic. And there were folks in Wake County who were talking about the coyotes that they were seeing in the Raleigh area. So they are definitely out there.
Well, that brings me to the question that has been occupying my mind during this pandemic. And I've had so many conversations with friends that more or less go like this. Are there more animals around, or are we just around more to see them? I know when I've been working from home, I've been staring out my back window and looking at the birds. And I'm certain that these cardinals were not in my yard before this summer, but I really doubt that that's the case. So what did you all learn about that, Elizabeth? I mean, is there more animal activity going on, or are we just noticing it more?
Well, we can definitely say that we humans are noticing it more. I think as to whether or not, as to whether or not there's actual change in the animal behavior, scientists don't yet have enough information to know for sure. We talked to Roland Kays about, who's done a lot of citizen science projects and a lot of camera trap projects that monitor wildlife behavior, and he's got this interesting project where he is actually asking for scientists who were working in the field tracking animals when the shutdown happened to try and gather as much evidence as possible to try and really get some data on whether or not animal behavior is changing.
And how does it change our relationship to these animals, to be kind of closer to them, to be bearing witness to them more often? Laura, maybe you can talk about how that has changed for you.
I mean, I certainly would say that I have a much more intimate relationship with my neighborhood cats, squirrels, birds. I have an elderly neighbor who frantically knocked on a number of neighbors' doors when she spotted some newborn fawns in the area. So personally, I've become significantly more interested in sort of the wildlife that was already around me. I think the pandemic has made our lives a lot smaller. You know, it's made us look a lot closer to home for any source of entertainment. And animals are certainly a source of entertainment.
Elizabeth, for you and your daughter, how has learning more about coyotes and learning that they actually may not be invasive, how has that changed how you all think about them?
Well, I mean, for me, I think it's sort of helping me come to terms with them as our new normal. You know, she brings a fresh perspective to wildlife, and she's really helping me realize that I can adjust my own opinions about these creatures. You know, I have a healthy respect and intellectual curiosity, but I'm still absolutely freaked out when I hear them howling in my yard, what sounds like just over my fence. But she's not. She takes it in stride. And so for her, coyotes are a natural part of North Carolina landscape. She's growing up with them here. And I'm working on incorporating that into my worldview as well.
Laura, I only have about a minute left, but when people listen to this audio documentary, Creep, and think about the animals in their own backyard and think about their relationship with coyotes in our state, what do you hope that they take away?
You know, I hope that when they start listening, it sort of begins with this dark mystery and maybe a little bit of fear of their neighborhood coyotes. But I'm hoping that as that kind of listening experience wraps up, that they come away with a sense of respect, because coyotes are crazy. They are incredible. They are so adaptive. They are so brilliant. And I think we have to respect them. We have to respect them because we also have to learn how to live with them. As Elizabeth said, you can wipe out 75% in an area and they come back. They are probably smarter than us. So I do hope that folks develop a new respect for animals that were previously thought of as predatory or dangerous.
My guests are Laura Pelliser, digital news producer for WUNC, and Elizabeth Friend, reporter and independent producer. They are the co-hosts for the audio special Creep. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can hear Creep by going to wunc.org/creep or catch it this weekend on WUNC, Saturday morning at 10:30 and Sunday evening at 5:30. All of those details at our website, stateofthings.org.